Welcome to Audio Weblog. I'm Bob. The following message is on my written weblog, too. You'll find this on January 23rd of this year, 2011. She was a Syrophoenician, or was it a Canaanite? A Greek? Oh, my. From the beginning, this story seems covered with mystery. It's told by Matthew in Matthew 15 and Mark, Mark 7, and no, they don't contradict each other at all. Jesus had retreated north and west to areas outside of his normal ministry turf for some needed rest. It happens to all of us who are his, and it happened to him. Bodies have limits. The area was called Syrophoenicia in that day. Tyre and Sidon were the principal cities. Enemy territory from an Old Testament perspective. Jesus lived and died in Old Testament times, you know. So what's a good Jew doing in a place like Syrophoenicia? Basically the same thing that he once did in Samaria. He's ministering to a lost but very needy woman. The people living in this area had descended from the cursed Canaanite tribes, which had been, in the main, driven out from what we call today the Holy Land. Canaanites were supposed to have been cut by God's directions from the diseased body of earth, like a cancer is cut by a skilled surgeon. The surgeons were Israelite warriors and their judges and kings. Well, they had been less than accurate, and Canaanites could still be found here and there, still under the curse. Unless, of course, there were one to break the curse. Do I mean the Son versus the Father? It was the Father, the God of Israel, who had placed this curse on Canaan. Would the Son be so bold as to remove it? Indeed, that's why Jesus, again directed by the Father, came. To reverse the curse. To show the other side of God, for we are all under the curse of death. By ministering to Samaritans and Canaanites, he demonstrated his love for all of us. In the Hebrew thinking of the day, though, she was merely a Greek. This term was used to cover all non-Jews. Paul used it this way. A Greek was not necessarily one born in Greece, but rather one born in the Greek culture, which then covered the world, language and all, a fact that Roman domination had not eradicated. She was a Gentile dog, they might even be tempted to call her. Jesus was weary from months of ministry. He had asked for asylum here, no interruptions, please. But the text declares, and don't you love it, he was not able to be hidden. Is that true in your life? The Christ in you? Doesn't he just reveal himself now and then, though in shame we try to hide him? Shame indeed. Why are we ashamed of Jesus? The cure for this shyness, I think, is more of Jesus. Abiding more. Drinking more. Tasting more. He'll come out. He'll shine in you. Well, excitement began to build in the neighborhood. One woman in particular, the subject of our story, was intrigued by the possibility of her demon-possessed daughter being cured. We're not sure of what symptoms manifested, but this wise woman, unlike most Westerners, believed in demon possession and was not seeking out a psychiatrist for help. This was a job for a miracle worker. And he had just moved in down the street. So off to Jesus she ran. Not a bad idea, but for a while it did seem pretty iffy. At her first request, the response was stone-cold silence. Nada. The disciples rejoiced that at least in this instance they understood and agreed with their master. Here was a chance to show solidarity when so often they would say things he had to rebuke. Dismiss her, they said, in seeming agreement with his stance of silence. Jesus took it even further by speaking to them so that she could hear. But as I hear him say this, I hear something else. I see a divine grin begin to spread across him in the spirit. Nothing visible yet, mind you. But the plan is certainly in place. The surprise awaits all. I'm only sent to lost Jews. Only to family members. You can see the smug attitude of the very Jewish apostles to be. The woman is startled. But not to be denied so easily. She bows and she cries, "Lord, help me." Oh, this is difficult. Jesus only does what he sees the Father do. But this is becoming painful to him. Nevertheless, Father is always right. He continues on, straight-faced, sober, and now even, may I say it, it sounds like crude. I said family first. Feed the family. It's not proper to take family's food from off of the table and throw it to dogs. Doubtless there are those who have read and reread these words and decided to go to another religion. The surface seekers look for reasons to move on. The disciples, one of whom gave us this account, were not of that ilk. They asked. They waited. They knew that Jesus, right or wrong to their tastes and thought life, was the Messiah, was God. That was enough. The woman winced in pain, and though visibly shaken by such toughness in his words, she continued on, using the analogy that he himself had introduced. "Yes, I understand. Families must have their food. But sometimes people accidentally drop some of their food on the floor. And those dogs you mentioned? Why, even they get something. Isn't there a scrap for me?" Jesus had known all along of the faith of this woman. But the Jewish disciples standing before a Gentile company needed to let this sink in. This, and Jesus' response to it. "Woman, such faith. You can have what you ask." Ah, the love in his eyes, the smile that must have covered his face, and the healing itself all told her the truth about this man, a good man indeed, a loving man, a man who made her feel at home with heaven as never before. This message of God's love for all must constantly be beaten into our sorry spirits, for we love to exclude. A few moments with Jesus works wonders on that awful demon. God bless you today, and be sure to check out other items in this series and all my other sermon audio series, too. Hope to see you real soon. Bye-bye.